Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, this is Linda Cohn from ESPN, and you're listening to the ML Sports Platter.
The ML Sports Platter back with you. Download, subscribe, leave feedback, and a five-star review. We are brought to you by our good friends at Stanley Law Offices, Welch & Company Jewelers, Ken's Auto Detailing, and Brian Conboy of Mass Mutual New York State. Go with Brian today for tax-efficient retirement plans. You might be retiring. You might have a youngster going to college. He's got the plan and the fit for you. Head on over to advisors.massmutual.com and check them out on Facebook and LinkedIn as well. Brian Conboy of Mass Mutual New York State is a proud ML Sports Platter sponsor. And also, a tip of the cap, thank you to the Swan and Whitaker families as well as Camilla's Golf Club for their support of the platform as well. I am so delighted to bring onto the program one of the best in the business, a senior writer at The Athletic, national college basketball insider reporter, and writer, and she's an author as well of a brand new book that is unbelievable. It's called The Big East, Inside the Most Entertaining and Influential League in College Basketball History. And frankly, Dana O'Neill, when you came out with this book, I was so excited because obviously I grew up on this stuff. The Big East, there was nothing like it. Dana O'Neill, congratulations on the book, and you can follow Dana on Twitter as well, at Dana O'Neill Writer. That's at Dana O'Neill Writer. How are you, Dana?
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was a lot of fun to write, as you can imagine.
I can imagine. This is the stuff that I grew up on in Central New York, of course, all the big names, the coaches, the players, the TV deal. Was there one moment, though, that made the Big East the Big East? When did it truly arrive, in your opinion?
Yeah, you know, I think I've been asked that a lot, and I feel like there's a couple of pivotal moments, but I think in terms of arrival, right, like just national consciousness, you got to look at some of those early, so Syracuse-Georgetown battles, right, when Georgetown was so good. I mean, you can start with the one at Manly Fieldhouse, but you can extend it to, you know, the Michael Graham game and all of that. When they were so good and Georgetown was this national power, everyone hated them, but yet so often within their own league, 1985 in the national championship, of course, they're getting beat up by their own teams. And to me, that just sent notice like, okay, this thing is for real. It's deep. It's good. It's a menace is really what it was.
So one of the things that I always find fascinating when people write about the greatest of something or whatever the case may be, mm-hmm. is why the other things aren't the greatest, meaning the ACC was also an unbelievable conference during that time. But your title says the Big East, inside the most entertaining and influential conference in college basketball history. Why did the Big East have a leg up, I guess, on the main challenger in the ACC in terms of what your title is telling us?
I think the Big East benefited really, honestly, from great timing. They came of age, you know, when Patrick Ewing, Chris Mullin, Pearl Washington came of age. And they also came of age with ESPN when this crazy idea of an all-sports network going cross-country put games everywhere. The ACC, you're right, it was terrific and it was really good. But there's two things about the ACC. It was pretty top-heavy. And, you know, the name recognitions were, you know, related to the name brand programs. Whereas the Big East, as it came along, everybody got a turn. But more so, the difference to me was the Big East, mostly, you know, largely because of the TV deal and, you know, the garden and the attention there, it was national. And it's hard to wrap your head around that now because every game is on TV. Yeah, but at the time, that wasn't the case. And, you know, Mike Hopkins, you know, your former associate head coach, told a story about growing up in California and like pedaling home from school as fast as he could to make sure he didn't miss a big Monday game. Mm-hmm. Jim Boeheim talked about walking through the airport and people asking him questions. That wasn't going to happen in other leagues, you know, at the time, but then it worked so well for the Big East. Everyone kind of stole a page from that.
Yeah. I remember Boeheim one time telling the story. I think it was actually in the 30 for 30 and then other places as well. I've heard him say it. Where, you know, he keeps saying, oh, you know, nobody knew who I was, and then I get Pearl, and then I go through the California airports. Oh, yeah. That's Pearl's coach. So those stories are just, oh my goodness, they're so good. If I had told you, Dana, 30 years ago, 35 years ago, whatever the case may be, that Jim Boeheim in 2022 would still be the head coach at Syracuse and Patrick Ewing would be the head coach at Georgetown, albeit in different conferences. But what would you have said then if I told you that?
It's insane, right? I mean, if you think about it, because I mean, I guess in some ways, like back maybe 35 years ago, I wouldn't have been as surprised that Jim Boeheim is still the coach because then people stuck around. But now that the world that we're living in, the fact that Jim Boeheim is still sticking around, you know, is unbelievable. And as I'm sure people, you know, in your town well know, when he was hired, he was as green as they come. I mean, they got him for practically no money. He was an assistant coach to, you know, Roy Danforth and everyone else kind of wasn't sure if they should hire him even. And here he is all these years later as, you know, the grandfather of the Big East, even though he's no longer in it. I think people still will always associate him with the league. It's an amazing, amazing run if you think about how long he has been there. And yeah, Patrick, I mean, did we ever foresee Patrick Ewing as a coach? Heck no. I mean, you know, he did, if you ask him. He saw himself as a coach, and it made sense to him. But it's crazy to think that, you know, these people who were such key players in the birth of the Big East are now still in college basketball all these years later.
It's mind-boggling. Go get the book online where books are sold, and, of course, major bookstores. The author is with us here on the ML Sports Platter, Dana O'Neill. It's called The Big East, Inside the Most Entertaining and Influential Conference in College Basketball History. What program do you think in the Big East was the most underrated?
Wow, good question.
I think it's Seton Hall. I think it's Seton Hall.
I was going to say, It would either have to be Seton Hall or Providence. And I still honestly, to this day, I still think Seton Hall is kind of underrated, frankly. You know, because Seton Hall certainly had to come the furthest, probably, if you think about it. I mean, if you talk to Bill Raftery, as I did, and what they didn't have, I mean, the stories are just hilarious. What, you know, how mom and pop and basic Seton Hall was, even through when, you know, P.J. Carlesimo got there and they were good. You know, Bruce Hamburger's P.J. old assistant talks about putting guys in vans to go down to, like, some crummy old gym to work out because there was nothing on campus. So nobody anticipated, you know, Seton Hall being very good, and then all of a sudden, here they come. And frankly, I still think sometimes people overlook Seton Hall. I love this year's team particularly. I mean, I just think they play really hard. I think I love the way Kevin Willard coaches them. But I still think when people talk about elite teams in the Big East, Villanova, of course, comes up, and now UConn comes up. And even then, it was always Villanova and UConn and Syracuse. People tend to skip over Seton Hall an awful lot.
You know, a lot of people skip over UConn, too. You know, in the history of the Big East, I thought they didn't do them enough justice in the 30 for 30. Jim Calhoun in Connecticut won 3 national championships during much of which, you know, they were kind of forgotten through the years, I think. Why isn't UConn up there? You know, they didn't have Ewing. They didn't have Pearl. Like, you know, they didn't have Carmelo. Like, why hasn't UConn gotten the love after all winning 3 titles? They have more than all those other programs.
They do. It's an interesting story arc for that university. You know, at the very beginning, nobody wanted UConn. Nobody saw UConn as being a reasonable team to add. You know, Dave Gavitt saw it, but they weren't, you know, very good. They were in the Yankee Conference. They weren't bad, but they weren't as good as the other ones, other programs. They're a big state university, not like everybody else, kind of stuck in the middle of nowhere in stores. And people really fought back on that. And he insisted that they could be something. And look, the most brilliant hire was hiring Jim Calhoun, who was like kind of chomping up the bit at Northeastern, like, yeah, I want to get in that league. And what he did there is unbelievable. I mean, considering what they came from. And you're right. I mean, I think, you know, so much of the early fabric of the league is built around St. John's and Syracuse, Georgetown and Villanova, right? Those four teams really just kind of, I don't know, they had these, you know, personal, these crazy coaches and these crazy moments within each other. And so UConn kind of came along a little bit later, but really UConn carried the league for quite some time when those other schools were going through some transitions with those coaches leaving and retiring and everyone kind of trying to figure out how to keep it going. UConn carried the league. I mean, there's no question that they did. They kept it as a national prominence. So I put them right up there at the top of the sort of Mount Rushmore of programs that carried that league and have made it something. Now, of course, that they're back in it, it makes so much sense and has added such legitimacy to the league again.
Yeah, and man, I mean, that 98-99 team with Khalid Al-Amin and Hamilton and Voskal and those guys, Ricky Moore coming off the bench, I mean, they beat a Duke team that today I almost think they're the best runner-up in the history of the sport. I mean, that they were so good. And then, you know, you fast forward to 3 years later, I remember coming home from St. Bonnie to watch the East Regional at the Dome, and it was Maryland and UConn in that Elite Eight game. And, you know, Caron Butler and that group, and they lost to Maryland, who eventually won the national championship. But UConn has had some unbelievable teams. One thing, Dana, in sports, in order to get to the top, you know, the NFL needs probably nothing. They're the only ones that doesn't need, you know, they don't need as much as, you know, the NBA or whatever. They're the top dog. But usually there's something that just propels it. In the Big East case, obviously, we've talked about TV rivalries, all that sort of thing. But it helps a sport when you have two teams in that conference ending the year against each other. In 87, there were two teams in the Final Four from the Big East, three teams. And then in 85, you had Georgetown and Villanova in one of the most important finals in the history of the sport. How important were those 2 years, in your opinion, as far as getting the Big East up to the top?
They were huge. And people always forget, you know, they almost had four in 85. Yes. You know, Boston College, I believe, was right on the edge. So, you know, it's amazing because if you think 1985, the league formed in 1979, 6 years, which is infancy. They have three teams in the Final Four. And two of them, Georgetown and St. John's, everyone thought had a chance to win the whole thing. And, you know, the third nobody thought did, Villanova. And, of course, you know, Villanova gets this storybook win. But that was the might of the league. And I think what made the league so vibrant was its ability to kind of rise everyone's game up. You know, Providence, again, was not great for until they kind of hired Rick Pitino and he figured out how to manipulate the three-point line, right? But they got their moment. Seton Hall got their moment. Everybody kind of got their moment. And, you know, that 85 game captures everyone's attention because of Villanova's, quote, you know, Cinderella win, even though Villanova people will tell you that wasn't the case. But, yeah, those games where you just have Big East on Big East on Big East, it's like, wait a minute, like, this league's been around for 5 minutes and they've got all these teams in the Final Four. It's you know, similar to, again, to now when the Big East reformed and Villanova goes out 3 years later and wins a national championship. And then 2 years later wins another one. You're kind of like, all right, time out. I guess this league is pretty good. That's where the eyeballs happen. We all know everyone pays attention to college basketball in March. So the more you do in March for your conference, for your program, that's when everybody watches you.
Yeah, I stand corrected. 87 had two Big East teams, Syracuse,
yeah,
Providence.
Syracuse and Providence.
Yeah, that was the Billy Donovan, you know, Rick Pitino run, and then three teams in the 85 Final Four. Just amazing. Pearl Washington, Patrick Ewing. It just didn't get bigger than those two guys in this respective conference. Where do you think Patrick Ewing's biggest impact was as a player and Pearl Washington's biggest impact?
Well, Patrick's biggest impact was the day he signed to go to Georgetown. You know, he's a number one player in the country, recruited by everybody, and went out to UCLA. He could have gone anywhere he wanted to go. And the Big East was brand new. And John Thompson was not brand new, but pretty new at Georgetown, a high school coach taking over Georgetown. And the biggest thing that Patrick Ewing did is, as Mike Trangisi tells the story, the day he signed his letter of intent, John Thompson called Dave Gavitt and said, hey, you know, we got him. And Gavin hung up the phone and looked at Trangisi and said, okay, now we can go to New York. He knew that Patrick Ewing had the star power to attract a tournament in New York City. And putting that tournament in New York City, of course, changed everything. Because it's like, it's New York. It's this event that it became. And that's not entirely because of Patrick Ewing, but that gave Gavin the safety net to know he could sell tickets. And then Pearl Washington, I think where his biggest impact was, first of all, the way he played. I mean, it's like watching ballet, but he hung around after Patrick and Chris Mullin moved along, right? You could have had this sort of dearth of great players, and here's Pearl. You know, the Pearl's still here, and he's every bit as impressive as they were in a completely different way. And he sells, you know, he makes the Carrier Dome a full house, which, you know, Jim Boeheim told me when they were moving to the Dome, there were some nerves about whether how they're going to fill this thing for basketball. And along comes Pearl, and there's no worries anymore. You know you're going to attract a fan base, right? Everybody wants to see what Pearl Washington's going to do. So those two players, along with Chris Mullin, I mean, their impact, you can't underestimate it. We all talk about the coaches because they were such great fun and great personalities. But you can have all the sideline shows you want. If the product on the court isn't very good, nobody's going to care. And the product on the court was great because they had great players.
You know, one thing I always think about is guys way back when, Fab Five, Ewing, Pearl, Carmelo even. I mean, hey, Carmelo's 20 years ago already.
I know, right? God.
It really is. You know, you think about some of the Grant Hills and those early 90s Duke teams. You think about, gosh, David Thompson, Michael Jordan. I could go on and on. James Worthy, the Carolina group. I think about today, man, all of the, you know, revamped conferences, all of these teams that are in new places, that it just is weird to see Rutgers in the Big Ten and Creighton in the Big East. And I'm like, huh? And also, Dana, as you know, name, image, and likeness now a big thing. Transfer portal, big thing. Let's fast forward and say that this conference is happening right now. It would be literally the SEC of college basketball. What happens with all these guys? What direction do you think that these guys go, the coaches, et cetera? It'd be a different ballgame these days. And oh, by the way, they don't stay in college for 3-4 years either.
Well, that's the biggest thing. They don't stay in college for 4 years. I mean, Patrick Ewing and all those guys stuck around. So you've got 4 years of Patrick, which not only is, you know, you get to see him grow up and become the dominant player, but if you're on the other side, you get to hate him for 4 years. And that's part of it. I mean, that's when people got into the rivalries, because the rivalries, yeah, at some level, you know, your rival is always because I went to school at Syracuse and therefore I hate Georgetown. But the rivalries were personal when the players stuck around, right? Like I don't like Patrick Ewing if I'm a Syracuse fan. So now I get to see him again and again and again. And these guys, you know, all of them stayed. I mean, they stayed, and you got to know them and you knew how good they were and how good they were going to make their programs and what they were going to do. And also, look, I mean, people were far more patient with coaches than they are today. I mean, some of the coaches, heck, I mean, not even that long ago, people wanted Jay Wright fired in his first 3 years, you know? So that changes things too, because it's the same thing. There's such a comfort, if you will, in knowing who's going to be on your team and you know who's going to be on the other side. So it just makes it so much more flavorful. And I still contend, and I've said this for many years, that the oldest teams still win. I mean, it hasn't really changed that much. A bunch of, you know, people come and go and transfer and all of this. But the teams that win are the ones that have players that stick around and are old. I mean, Baylor last year was old. You know, Gonzaga, who lost them, was old. Villanova was old. Virginia was old. North Carolina that year was old. Those are the teams that are the best teams in the country. So that really hasn't changed. We just sort of lose the old a little bit.
Everybody misses the Big East. They have their own reasons why. I remember this past summer, I was in Cooperstown for Derek Jeter's induction, covering that, and I turned and I said, oh my God, there's Patrick Ewing. And then I went, wait a minute, what? He came in with Michael Jordan. And, you know, they're 10 feet away from me, and there is right there in front of me. I'm going, good grief. Yeah, how big is Derek Jeter now? Because these two guys came to the induction with the Jordan brand and all that sort of thing. So I looked over at Patrick. I said, do you have a couple quick minutes? And he says, no. I said, okay. I said, well, that's okay. I'm from Syracuse anyway. I said, how about a picture? He goes, no, you can just take a picture of me from there. And I just joked. And I said, by the way, I missed the Big East. And he just gave me a little wink. What makes you miss the Big East? You know, and do you think about it on a daily basis still when you're covering the game? Because miss it so much, Dana.
Yeah, I miss the Big East tournament. I know it still goes on, but I miss the one that we all remember in New York. I mean, I used to, when I was working at, you know, ESPN before the Philadelphia Daily News, every single year I rose my hand. Yes, please, I'll cover that. Yes, please, I'll cover that. And he's close to home. Yeah, but there wasn't going to be anything better. In fact, in my opinion, it was better than the first weekend of the NCAA tournament more often than not.
Yep.
You know, the games were always just insane. Something wild always happened. You know, I was there for Kemba Walker. I was there for Jerry McNamara. You know, I was there for six overtimes. I was there when Alan Ray got his eye poked out by Carl Krause. I mean, like, crazy stuff happens up there. So, you know, and the atmosphere was just incredibly electric. Every fan base, you know, I remember talking to fans back when I covered it. A lot of them chose to go to New York and essentially skip the first weekend of the NCAA tournament because they knew it was going to be better basketball. The games were more competitive. And a lot of times the first weekend, especially if your team is good, it's not much fun. You win, but not very gripping. I miss that. I've since covered the Big Ten and I've covered the ACC and I've covered the Big East and I've covered the SEC. I've covered all of them, frankly, every postseason tournament since then, and nothing comes close to what that week was in New York. Nothing.
Final one for you in the minute I have left or so. What do you hope people say about this book when they get done with it?
I hope they're nostalgic like I was and they read it kind of in that vein. You know, I think, I hope they appreciate how awesome and fun and colorful and flavorful it was. You know, I miss all of that too. We've, you know, look, money changes everything and people are afraid to be as personable sometimes as they used to be because it could cost them a lot. So I hope they appreciate just kind of how lucky we were to sit back and witness the birth of this great idea that Dave Gavitt had and see it just blossom into something that wasn't just dominant, but was so stinking entertaining.
Yeah, no, it's so well said. This book captures the inside of a special time in Big East basketball. If you love the game, this book is a must-read. That coming from Jim Calhoun, the Hall of Famer and former UConn men's basketball coach, multiple national title winner. And it's out, major bookstores, online where books are sold. The author is Dana O'Neill. Go get it. It's called The Big East, Inside the Most Entertaining and Influential Conference in College Basketball History. And you can obviously follow Dana on Twitter, at Dana O'Neill Writer, the terrific national college basketball insider, reporter, and writer for The Athletic. Dana, this was amazing. I can't thank you enough for coming on. You've been so nice to me through the years. I remember meeting you, I think, in Pittsburgh in 2012 at the tournament. I ran into you in New York a couple times at the last two Big East tournaments when it was really the Big East. This was a treat. Congrats on the book, and hopefully I can catch up with you down the road.
Absolutely, and thank you so much for having me, Mike. I really appreciate it.
Unbelievable interview with Dana O'Neill. I'm Mike Lindsley, the ML Sports Platter, all over the major platforms, Spotify, Google, Apple, Stitcher, Deezer, and wherever you get podcasts. Please do leave feedback and a 5-star review, and of course, download and subscribe to the show wherever you get podcasts on your smartphone device. We are brought to you by Liverpool Physical Therapy, Ken's Auto Detailing, and our great friends at Barks and Rec Doggy Daycare. Hey, if you're in and around Central New York, you want to bring your pup for a play day, I'll tell you what, my man Cooper loves it there. He has a ton of buddies, and they've got a huge playground in the back. They do great work with a local dog shelter as well. So make sure you get on over to Barks and Rec Doggy Daycare. It is on Route 11 in Cicero. Go see him on Instagram. Go see him on Facebook as well. They do awesome, awesome work. They have great pups, a staff that is top-notch as well. And B&R Bunkhouse Adoptables is the shelter they work with, and please do support them. Adopt, don't shop, and there's just a great organization across the board. Tip of the cap, thank you as well to your State Farm agent, Matt Graham, and the Vince Aguirre Consulting Group, as well as thank you sent out to the Swan and Whitaker families for their support of the program as well. Hit me on Twitter, at Mike L Sports. Big time thanks to Dana O'Neill. I'm Mike Lindsley. As I always tell you, enjoy the games. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.